meeting on September 18th to order. And we have a roll call vote, please. A roll call, please.
Russ Smith.
Douglas Ward.
Jim Fleming.
Tom Weller.
Arnold Purdy.
Everyone is here except for Linda. I don't know why, but we do have a quorum. Jim, lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, approval of meeting minutes. I don't know when the meeting was, it was a long ago for another.
June 9th.
I move that we approve it. Any changes or additions? No?
Nope.
I'll take a motion to approve the meeting.
You already made the motion. I second.
All right. Any further discussion? Vote?
Aye.
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 Pass. Okay, number 5. Water sewer rate change update. Who's in charge of that? Mr. Allen?
You gotta plug everything in there, right?
Oh, yeah, he's asking me a question.
Take your time. We're all real young here.
Some of us are.
Yeah. None of us are as young as we used to be. Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, well, obviously the water and sewer rates, only about one or two of you get a water or sewer bill from us, so you wouldn't know it as directly. But anyway, we've got that going on July 1, and we had initially a few comments and, you know, some that we had to go check and work out, and there's been a few people change their meter size. I don't know how many about.
We've done two, and we've got two or three to go.
Because the new rate meter size affects, because that's the kind of, that's part of the formula. It's volume plus the meter size, and some folks had larger meters than were needed, and I think a lot of times people, you know, it didn't matter when NightNet back 15 years ago or 14 years ago, whenever, when they put those in, and, you know, I think your conventional wisdom was, well, the bigger the better, you know. So consequently, anyway, we got some of those folks, but it's actually settled down real good, and we've worked through people, and one of the things we find when we run, we actually have a program now that we work with the consultant, so we can take your bill and compare what it was last year compared to this year, if you use the same amount of water. And what that really graphically shows was the month we sent out, July, which is the highest volume month for water usage, showed the big difference. But then when you get into the winter, fall, winter, spring, brought it right down. So when you looked at it for the year, you know, the 1 month shocked you. And so people naturally think that I'm gonna have that for 12 months. And when you actually run the spreadsheet. And so when people look at that, some people actually save money. They had a high bill in July and actually saved money in the winter. So, you know, it played out. And so we just dealt with these one-on-one and explained it and then worked on meters and things. The fire department, because they had the meter, they were metered in the bays where the fire trucks fill up. Fire hydrants are free in all communities, but inside the fire stations, some fire departments have a split system where they call it the domestic side, where they take showers and things. That's metered. The other side is either not metered or it's metered and not charged because it's going into a fire truck, a 3,000-gallon tender, you know. So depending on how many calls you have in a month and when you come back in to fill up the trucks, a lot of departments actually fill at hydrants. Corey called, Scott did some calling. We called and worked, checked around all of the other fire departments, and actually most all of them charge in the bays, but as a policy, they fill outside to avoid paying for it. So anyway, we decided, why make them go outside? So water's water. So it really, you know, it didn't matter. So worked with Mike, and they did change out their meter at their administrative office because they had one much larger than they needed. And then we came up with a system to figure out how much water they use on the domestic side. And anything above that is just considered for the fire station, call it for the trucks. Without a meter, there's no way to know exactly, so you just, and he's fine with it. And we've sent them their new bill and their and credited back anything from the month before, so they're good. And you know, one other place we went to just had a high water usage. I mean, way more than they should have. And I think they discovered they got all kinds of leaks and things, and they're working on that. So, any questions or comments on, you could ask. Staff can tell you that the calls have decreased to not any really to speak of.
Well, I'm glad they found the leaks in some of those places, because they were water going down, not doing anything. And then that, you know, that's good. Now they don't have nothing to complain about. They will repair all the leaks, I hope, unless they want more with higher bills.
Yeah, I mean, we're all human, and I think people fix, you know, when you get a higher bill, it kind of forces you to look at what you do.
Mm-hmm. It adds inspiration.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened. So yeah. People went out and worked on things. We haven't really heard from restaurants that it's, you know, we knew that that was the case, beauty parlors, the motels, trailer parks, RV parks, you know, because they're the ones who, of course, we only heard from those who the bill went up. We didn't hear from those who dropped. And that's why we haven't heard from any of those folks. You know, so it's equalized. I think it's good. We'll move toward SDCs next to get that also under the same type of system that will be more fair. You know, no one likes SDCs, and for a long time people here complained about the SDC system development charges. Only new construction pays that, so the average person, of course, doesn't. But we're in this fall, we're going to get that figured out and have something for in the next year. We'll have a new SDC type of rate and policy.
Good.
Thank you, Rick. Anyone, any more questions on water? No?
Why does it show up as sewer charge?
Because sewer has a volume charge and water has a volume charge. And so, I guess I don't understand the question.
Well, I'm just looking at...
When you look at the bills, it says the water base rate, and actually I want to look at the church again. The water base rate, and then it says the water usage, and then it says the sewer charge, but that lumps together the base rate and the usage charge. And there was no way we could break that out on the bills. And so that one looks like a lot harder hit when you can break those two numbers up. They look smaller than, but they're pretty comparable when you add the two water things together against the sewer charge. But if you, does that help you at all? No?
No. When you're watering a lawn and you get this high sewer charge for watering a lawn, it doesn't make sense. But
Yeah, the residential, that's not true.
Right.
So theirs is just based off winter flow. The problem with that, you know, there's no perfect system, and if the consultant was here, that's what he would tell you. There is no perfect system. It's impossible. And most water districts have gone to flow-based, and cities with sewers have gone to that, because the theory is obviously a gallon in, a gallon goes down the drain. So with commercial, trouble is a car wash business or a restaurant or a motel, their business goes up in the summer, and it is mostly because of, and then that water's going down the drain. If you give them a winter, if you base it off the winter, you take an RV park that has 3 tenants in it in January and 50 all summer long, and you base it off just winter, see? So that's why commercial, in most cities that do this, Ben, they're all doing it. Redmond Matters. What they do is they charge commercials year-round. Now, if you do quite a bit of watering outside, that then is one of those little blips that throws you. what people can do, and we've talked about, is having a, you have a meter that's going to go off to your irrigation system. I mean, you go off, you branch off to the irrigation system, and put a meter or some way where if you're one of those group people, there's just a few, I mean, again, these are just handfuls of people, we could then take what is going into your irrigation system, and that could be subtracted. We don't have any desire to charge you for what's going outside. It's just there's no system to not do that. So if you guys are one of those, then we can talk about a way to do that.
Okay.
And a church maybe one of those. If someone had a big lawn, disproportionate to their business increasing, you know, stuff like that.
So now when water goes into Cagle, are the people that live out there that have existing wells, are they going to be able to keep their well operation?
They'll be able to keep their well for anything outdoors.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
that's the plan. I mean, that would be the plan. That's how the Pine is. Now, there are some cities that don't, water districts don't let you, but I think that the way the Pine is operated, that's worked pretty well. And I would think, to be honest, it'd be better for us to keep people watering outside with your well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because it's less, our pipes have to be bigger. The more people water outside, we have to have more water rights, and they're super expensive to buy. So really, we just want to make sure what you're drinking, living on domestically inside the house, is our water.
Now, is the city water in any way treated with anything?
It is not.
Is it just pure as it comes out of the ground?
Yes.
No fluoride or?
No fluoride, no chlorine, no chemicals of any sort.
And that's because we don't need it?
We don't need it. We're not required by the state to do it. The water that comes out of our wells is in a different aquifer than this shallow aquifer like I have at my house. Mm-hmm. Probably have in Cagle. The wells are 270 feet deep out there, and they're in hard rock. And it's not susceptible to any surface water contamination or anything from the surface.
The Cagle thing, you know, we'll be back down the road on that.
Where exactly are we,
Cagle,
on time frame schedule for supplying city sewer water for everybody?
It's in the big picture. Each step is about a year. And that could be 9 months or 15 months. But we just finishing the year of figuring out what it would cost to expand the sewer and water out there, and they're going to give a report back here October or November. But we'll have a presentation here. So anyway, we'll get an idea of those costs. You've seen it because you've been in council meeting, I think. And those were just estimates. And now they'll give better estimates. So then the council will then decide, do they want to go to the next step? No commitment that we're building. It's just go to the next step. The next step then is securing funding, grants and loans. Corey's already went to some meetings on it. I have met with them. We have people coming down. So, but you spend about a year finding your funding. Obviously, trying to increase the number of grants. It'll be federal and state money. And again, you have no idea what's available and what we can get. That then will tell us, okay, based on how many grant loans and interest rates, what's the cost going to be based on those estimated construction costs. That's another jump-off point for the council. Then they'll be able to talk about, okay, if we get this many grants and loans, and this is the cost, this is your cost as someone who lives out there. And then they will decide, do they want to move forward? So that's, like I say, a year from now. Then you'll move toward the actual engineering of the project, you know, construction documents. That's about a year-long process. And then the construction itself is about a year-long. So there's 3 one-year cycles ahead. So I would say between 3 to 4 years, if the council at several points decides to move forward, and each of those are about a year apart. That's about, it's a long process. You get into sewer and water, the laws and the rules and the Davis-Bacon wages and all of the things that you have to follow are immense.
Do you find when you go for bid, it's better to bid in the late fall or winter as opposed to spring and summer?
Well, I think in general that's true. I mean, a project like this size, what Lapine hasn't done any, these are several million dollars. When it's a year-long project, it probably doesn't matter as much. Because in other words, it's not one someone's going to come in and do in 90 days, so they're trying to balance out their schedule. It'll take a year to build, so therefore, it's going to take in a winter and a summer, regardless of when you start or end. So, but I can, yeah. I mean,
next. Well, I've been on other boards, and theoretically, it's always been better to go to bid early winter for something, even if it takes longer than 90 days.
Yes. And yeah, we've done that here on other projects, just for that purpose. Then, because they can get started earlier, they're looking for business for next summer.
Right.
If you try to bid it in the spring, their summer's already booked.
Yep.
Then you start paying. And right now, prices are just high because, you know, it's a boom-bust cycle. You know, and Central Oregon is in a boom, and a lot of contractors left the market during the bust. And those who are there don't want to amp up as big because they didn't like the fall. So you'll find all of them aren't staffed up. They can't get the help. So they also know it. And then they're charging premium prices. And there's just nothing you can do about it. I mean, it's a private market system. They're private contractors. They bid it. And, you know, supply and demand. And that's what everybody's finding everywhere, you know, on projects.
Okay, anything else?
Let's go on to number 6, First Street Project Update.
Okay, you can see, I was just looked there when I came in. There, you know, I saw that the gas company was out there doing some work today. They're kind of out doing little odds and ends, I think, to fix little things they needed to. The footings and the foundation, you see those big bolts are, those are for the big arms. They ended up, I guess, one was engineered in the wrong location, and so they had to move it to either a different spot right there, or it was actually a different corner. But there was some goof up there, and then that caused them to have to get a different arm. And so they, you know, it's just working through its system and process. They're going to be done, they say, about the middle of October. So a few weeks, you know, who knows? It wouldn't surprise me if it's extended. That's kind of common, and that's all written into their agreements.
It'll October for the whole thing?
Yeah, I think so. That's their date. It's supposed to be toward the middle to end of October.
I think they're very optimistic.
Oh, like I said, they'll add on to it, you know.
I think the whole thing part on this stage, though, it's not the landscaping, it's the signals, sidewalks.
We won't landscape till next year. What we're going to do is we're going to, after it's all done, we're going to go in and bid the landscaping because then it's easier. When a landscaper can touch it, walk it, and measure it, they're not guessing.
Yeah.
And right now, if you try to do it, they're guessing it off plans. And you'll get a better price when they can actually, and we're not really, just what you said, we can bid it this winter and then have a spring, get it done by the 4th of July type thing. That'll be the best for the best pricing. Get an early project. But then they can go up and walk the sidewalks, they can actually get their tape measure out. They can look under the project. ODOT always had to put the conduits in, that was all in the original bids. So they had to put the conduits and the irrigation lines just sleeve through them.
Right.
And so I think that'll work out better. They are putting in electrical. They're doing the electrical side, ODOT is. When we got the extra $150,000 to do the extra work, that money went directly to ODOT. I mean, it never came to the city. It wasn't the city, you know, we didn't have any. They went ahead and then they asked for bids on that through their contractors. And anyway, they got all of it. So they're putting that all in. And that's what I can tell they've been working on. It looks like they've been building the boxes. And that's one reason the contractor stopped. You're going to put some of those go in the sidewalks. They didn't want to build the sidewalk and then, you know, have to stick that. So they're moving forward on that, you know, however they do that. So, and the sidewalks are 3/4 poured, you can see that.
Yeah.
Other than like on the corners where they have to do the ADA stuff, and I imagine they're going to wait until they get more stuff done there because you can't pour the ADA because the slopes have to be just perfect, you know. And we can have an update from the project if maybe next, well, they should be about done. We might have the project manager for ODOT come in or something, maybe in our October meeting, and he can kind of give you an update of how it's wrapping up, because it'll be down to a few weeks, theoretically. But all's well, they're, to my knowledge, they're on budget, on target for what they want to do. So.
Anything else? Okay, let's hear about the big water shutdown. How was that town when it happened, so I missed all the excitement?
Well, you know, never a dull moment. Somebody on last Thursday morning hit a fire hydrant out at the source that's right there. And I kept telling people, it's not a fire hydrant, really. It's not there to protect buildings and things. I'm assuming it's there as much as any for work that we would use or do.
I think that hydrant got put there for Forest Service.
Forest Service.
That's why I was thinking it was Forest Service.
Because there's nothing out there.
Right.
Well, except for forest.
Yeah. And there's no other fire hydrants on the line.
That'd be really handy. I was thinking if you had a forest fire out there, it'd be really handy to have water right there.
Yeah.
It needs, and it will get in the future, moved over a little, and it'll have concrete barricades around it that when someone comes down that road and has trouble staying on the road, they will not be hitting something like that. They took out phone box and other stuff. And of course, they hit and run, so to my knowledge, nobody has been arrested or even to. The sheriff was all here and they went out and did their thing. So, we have some pictures. I don't know. Did you ever get them?
Yeah, I got
some. We got a couple of them here. There's that's what our crews, when they got there, there's the hydrant and the water's coming up from underneath it and created a river. And then next, while they're there, that's the same spot, go back, basically, and it's gone. The hydrant has just disappeared. It pulled itself down in.
It did what?
The hydrant disappeared in that.
The dirt got undermined and it sunk.
Well, it sunk and it just, yeah.
It's there someplace.
So then you couldn't get to a valve because go to there. You don't know where there's a valve. This is deep. You go to the next pictures, you'll see the holes. I mean, you can't just put a wrench on it. You don't even know where to put the wrench on it. So, consequently.
Underneath right there is where that fire hydrant was.
That's under the pavement.
That's at least 4 feet. Deep, 5 feet.
So they got the water. They had to go back to the tank, which was the closest valve at the source because it was right there. Corey was out. They called someone. The public obviously called in here, and our guys went right out there. And so Corey called me. I said, "You get out and see what's going on." And Scott was on a trip to the coast, I think. And so they shut the valve off from the tank. I then called Vic Russell, just knowing that he knows water line. He installs stuff like that, just to say, hey, you want to run over and look at that, just to see, make sure that you know what's going on. And he's, of course, only a few blocks away. He dropped what he was doing and headed right over. And so together, they figured out a plan. They went downstream and shut off the valve into town, kind of out by Russell in the industrial park, which there was a valving in that area. Shut that down. Of course, in those few minutes, some dirt got into the system, and not knowing if it was how much, I mean, you have no idea how much or what it is to be safe. You know, to err on the side of caution, we put out the boil alert. As it turned out, probably wasn't necessary, but That's good. You know, we don't want anyone. We called the clinics and everything and told them to be careful and just be alerted to it. The issue was once we shut down the water line, we have no storage on this side of that break, so therefore the only water people had was in the pipes, which is a lot of water in a system like this. But your pressure is going to drop, and any of you that maybe you noticed that right away. So we then put out the sheriff's office came in, the emergency services coordinator. I called him immediately. He put out an alert to the radio stations that said, stop, basically use water for, you know, don't boil water, but also stop watering your yards. We wanted to reduce the consumption to conserve the water if we only have water in the lines. At that point, we didn't know if this is a 1 hour deal, a 1 day deal, or a 1 week deal. I mean, we had no clue. Obviously, this is in the first hour. So he did that and he came down. We kind of set up an emergency operations center, call it an incident command post. You can use your term. There's technical parts to all of that. But we did have the sheriff here, the sheriff's department. Corey was here. I was here. And a couple others came. And so I came down immediately. And so we set up shop here. And one thing about having the emergency services guy, he has every phone number.
Yeah.
Corey can say that was helpful.
Yeah, very helpful for finding out who we needed to coordinate with. And then we were just constantly working with Deschutes County, a gentleman from there who's in their environmental health department, you know, reaching out to people in Salem about working safe drinking water program, just making sure we were following all the procedures appropriately and moving forward as fast as we could. I think we, all things considered.
Yeah, so we made sure we followed all the rules, and the county environmental health people ultimately were in charge. I talked to the state. They said, go through the county guy. So we had all of them here and on the phone. So while Vic and our guys are out fixing this, we were in here. And then the staff inside, we had a couple volunteers come down, the mayor's wife, and we started calling all of the people that we could get a hold of based off our phone list. And we start out with, of course, the most vulnerable type of businesses first. Schools, you know, clinics.
Prairie House.
Restaurants. Yeah. So then that was all fixed by about 3:30. And, you know, firing a system back up, it's the air in the system that explain what happens if you don't deal with the air.
If you don't leave the air out, you can get a water hammer in the system when the water comes back on, and you can actually blow pipes apart with the air.
So after being down for that long and everything, so we had to put a blow pipe where this hydrant was and install that on there. And so they brought the water back up, had to let the air move its way back to the blow pipe. But by 4:30 or something that day, it was back on. Now then, you have to keep the boil alert going by law until you've run tests. We had the guy happen to be in Lapine that morning heading south that does the testing. He was here at 5, and he went and took tests at the site, and he went to these other places that they do it. And I didn't know this, but it's not like, if the lab was sitting at our plant, it's still an 18-hour test because it has to grow. You can't. There's no way. It's a law. It's a rule. So they had to take the samples to Corvallis. They drove them over there right that night, got them over there, and then the 18 hours began. So on Friday at 5, we, 4:30, 5:30, they called and said, you're good. We had the press release ready to go because we anticipated it. We had one that if it was good and one if it was bad because we wanted to be able to get it out immediately. And we had phone messages ready and we had everything. So when we got the word, we could switch from boil water advisory to it's removed. And the emergency service coordinator was over at the Beaver game, headed to the Beaver game, but we had that all set up and he threw with his cell phone, sent out press releases from Corvallis. Like I say, we worked to get it all done ahead of time for either scenario, good or bad. And the test came back clean. So it was a good learning session. I think that, you know, Lapine hasn't had a you know, you think a fire is your big concern, which it is, but inside the city there hasn't been a real particular drill on something like that. So that was a good dry run with it. The emergency services guy was great. We're gonna have to do some kind of debriefing on it and how well it worked and when you call those people and all of those kinds of things. So unfortunate. Hopefully we'll find the person. It would be just nice. I doubt they'd have any money to help pay for it.
Two things. When I worked for Lane County, we broke water lines and they would reduce pressure in the water lines but never shut it off, and they would repair them. And that all depends upon the type of break you have. Secondly, do we have any other vulnerable spots that we need to look at for concrete barricades?
I think any of our hydrants could be a vulnerable spot. Any new construction now, the hydrants will have a large pad poured around them and concrete or steel will fill concrete bollards put in there. And I think we probably
this one didn't snap off, but it should because it was a software.
Yeah, it's
they automatically
it works here. They have a breakaway built into the hydrant.
Right there,
but
they don't have the thrust block.
And that those
there's no thrust block on that.
That thrust block got blown away in the water. They did pour concrete at the foot of the hydrant like they're supposed to have, but the ground's so soft that it just turns and snaps that pipe between the valve and the hydrant itself.
But the one that's 3 foot under, the thrust block is supposed to be 3 foot under to help that breakaway, was that there?
Yeah.
And that was in place?
Yeah.
And it washed away?
Yeah.
And it didn't break that? I would go after the manufacturer on that breakaway. Because that breakaway should have broke right there and the valve should have stopped. You would have never had this problem. If you go back two pictures to the fire hydrant, right there, see right below that little coupling? You see them on all of them? It's a little coupling about this big. There's a valve in there. It's called a breakaway. So if somebody hits that fire hydrant and knocks it off, it's got a valve inside to shut it off. And then you wouldn't have had any contamination. Down below the ground is a big concrete thrust block.
Right.
To hold that in place so when they hit it's some rigid. So it does break away. Just so you know. But it's surprising that didn't happen.
And it's they've broke appropriately here a few times. They've broke like this a few times too. 5 years ago this boil water for loss of pressure wasn't a rule. And you think in the old days, I mean, when I started 20 years ago and the pipe broke and people had mud come out of their sink for a little while, that was just where it was at. This is a relatively new law that you have to do is boil water for a loss of pressure.
But if the breakaway, if the thrust block washed away from that, I would honestly get an engineer out here and figure out, because of the soil, get a soil engineer out here to figure out what they can do to make it rigid. Because that's what that thrust block is for. And if it's not working, then I think you guys need to look at this again. Because all these fire hydrants around, if they're doing the same thing, you're going to have that same problem. Just my opinion, that's all.
Was there a spec done on that when it was installed?
Yeah, when they were installed, the standard detail just showed a thrust block poured down at the base of the foot of the hydrant underground. We've redrawn that since. Well, that's not air.
Not there, that's just company.
Her company redrew us a spec on that. That includes a 6 foot by 6 foot concrete pad at the ground level, at surface level, and with bollards in it.
And bollards, I think that's one of the keys, is trying to get them to dent their car on the bollards and not
as
the fire hydrants.
Was the soil test done to determine the, you know, the proper spec for that?
Right.
I don't know.
Because, you know, it depends on the types of soil that you have, what the spec would need to be for it. So
my guess is that the district you're talking 2002, 15, 13 years ago, my guess is that they just, someone wanted to put a fire hydrant on there, and they put a fire hydrant, they poured some concrete around it, what they thought. I doubt that they did much else. That's long time ago. Who knows what the districts did.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't understand the soil around here either.
Yeah.
know, this volcanic precipitate is not normal soil. So
we have an engineer with the soil engineer in Yakima, because we were on an irrigation lot in building medical university, and we ran through the same thing, but the engineer had to go off the soils engineer's report and what was going to work for that fire hydrant. We had three of them in place we had put in, and it was actually we had to go down with a loop and then pour a concrete block behind that loop, so that, and then do the pad on the top. So we had that, and then we had a secondary to make sure that if that got hit, that breakaway would work. But it's all based off, like you said, the soils engineer report.
The other thing we planned during the day on Friday was if we had a bad test, then we would have to chlorinate. And so we don't have a chlorinating system because we don't chlorinate. And so I spent quite a bit of time, you know, talking to the city of Bend and city of Redmond, got some calls in. Talked to Avion, and Avion manager, in fact, he called me at 8 o'clock Friday night. You know, he was still checking in on us. But we had a private company that was going to come out that evening, and we were going to set up a chlorination at the wellhead that would have been required. And then you run your tests after that.
Right.
And those are all the requirements. So we planned for both scenarios. Which I think was a prudent thing to do, and fortunately we didn't have to.
So, is the system all set up? You can eject chlorine easily, or?
No. There is, in both of the well houses, there is a port where we could eject chlorine through. And to do so, we would call, Ferguson or H.D. Fowler, they both have chlorination equipment, and then they would come and chlorinate.
Ferguson is a nice idea, and he talked about you want to have, if you don't have that tap in there, you want to have it to where we can, in, you know, before you have an emergency, it sounds like you have a port there, but if not, he says go ahead and get one put in so that when they come, they can just hook onto that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they would tap it. Because he said, you know, they're used to doing it. There's just not lots of companies that do that kind of work.
Right.
You know, and in some of the communities, they chloride all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's just part of what they do. Our system doesn't require it. So some of the plans we want to work on. And but I think the other point is, through our rate, one of the things our consultant said on the Kegel, and you're going to see it in our SDCs and things, is we need to have a redundant system. This idea of one pipe coming from one source, you know, the power company, you know, you can backfeed the other direction.
Not yet. Still working on it.
We're supposed to.
Yes. And they were just, Dave was talking about that. But they were saying if you get a big one, you can bring it in somewhat from the backside. You can do different things. Ours is coming down one line coming in, and it's not what we want. So that our Anderson Perry says what we need to do is go out by Wikia, head east, get into that deeper, probably sink a third well, and have a tank. It would be smaller. Have a tank out there. To where, if you have something, you can then send it in from the other side.
The tanks that you already have at the...
Well, it's still coming off of that 16-inch.
But see, at least it'd give you some storage that would be separate.
That tank out by your working shop out there were in use.
Yeah,
that might have.
How big is that?
200,000.
Yeah.
Right. Right now, what I want to do is get that tank back operationally, and it'll have to be sandblasted and see what's up. Have it looked at. That would have, and I think that and we've talked about that, is that would give us a certain amount of, I don't know,
at least a stop gap.
It'd give you, if you got people just drinking and not watering outside, you could get you,
mostly a day.
You know.
Maybe 2 days.
You might be able to get a couple days out of it, which is a big deal.
So everybody curtailed their water use.
Well, if we had, we'd go around and enforce or restrict. But that, I, that's a short-term thing, is make sure that that tank functions and integrated in. Have repair, make sure we have the proper repair things we need in place for, because one of the things the consultant said, you need to have all your different sizes, like 16-inch. If you need a 16-inch pipe, you just don't go pick that up off the shelf. You need a few sections. You may, it may sit there for a decade, but you better just have some of those things. So that's one of the things we're going to work with Scott and them on, all the different potential valvings that we need, see what we have, see what we don't have, make sure that we've got the parts we need for something happening, because stuff will happen. You know, it could be an earthquake, it could be, maybe someone's digging out there, someone hits a big main, who knows? I mean, you could think about all kinds of stuff happening. So I do think we need a redundant system over the long haul. That's a several year thing, but you've obviously been without it this long. But if you look in a perfect world, you definitely want a redundancy.
I think your best bet is the secondary well, just to make sure, down the line, have a secondary well, a secondary tank, so like you said, back feed. That's a better way to go. The tank that we have, if you talk about cleaning, that's good for right now, but when you've got something down, it's going to be down for a long time, you're in trouble.
It was amazing in that presentation that we had, what that third well, second tank and other transmission line north did for the entire system. I mean, hydraulically, it put fire flows up there bigger than any large city could dream.
Right.
Yeah, fire flow is another reason. You know, we're a long ways out there at Wickia, and as you put water into Kegel. So it's just, But that's for down the road. But it'll cost, I think the cost on that was about $1.5 million. And when you have a small system, a bunch of money. So,
but that system is going to be expanding, so you're going to need the boat. You're going to have it.
So that's the story now.
How many meters are there total on the system?
670.
That's a lot of costs spread out over 670.
Oh yeah, you'll have to. You know, it's one of those things that's amortized over 20 years. And it's, you're right. You do the math. And that's one problem with our system, is that we have to have redundancy. We should have it just like anywhere else, but we have such a small system. So either you have a small system that's vulnerable to problems, because I know what he's saying. He's saying that's not very many customers to spread it over. That's the problem. It costs us more to operate because we're a small system. Because a valve is a valve. It costs the same whether there's 1,000
people on it or 670 on it.
That's correct. A million gallon reservoir costs the same.
Right.
So it's one of those things.
And Kegel ain't going to bail you out on that one?
No. No.
Well, it sounds like you guys did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard about this I was in Florence when all this happened. And it came over Karen's email. God only knows what it meant. We didn't know. It sounds like you guys were.
Well, the press release is that Corey and Nathan, the lieutenant, really were good. It was a boil advisory. And the other thing is, we had the sheriff's office, or the county brought in ODOT. Well, this. You learn a lot of things. You know that. And see, nothing is simple. You know, everyone's mad at government. They pick on everybody. That's fun to do. You know that we could take the ODOT signs, the ones either permanently on the highway or temporary ones. They cannot put up a boil alert or anything like that. ODOT would not allow it because those are for directing people on road construction. It's against state rules. You cannot have that done. So we're like, well, you're kidding me. We want people. Everyone comes in on Huntington or the highway. We want people to know as they're entering the city to boil their water. It's an alert. So the county brought us down a couple billboards, and they said, well, we're just going to go stick one up along the highway. And ODOT said, that actually isn't legal. But
really?
That's what the report we had. I didn't talk to ODOT, but that's what the sheriff's office report was. So they went ahead and put it out there at Wikia anyway. And ODOT didn't care, I think, but if you follow the rules, it wouldn't. And then we put one on Huntington.
Is that because it's a temporary sign and not more like
a permanent sign? No, I think it's, I would talk to them. My guess is it's the messaging. What they're trying to say is they don't want their signs used unless it's a highway, it's traffic on the highway, snow on the highway, wreck on the highway, that it may be in some small town they think that, you know, things that are emergencies aren't really emergencies. I don't know.
Especially when they have a major project going on.
Well, they would have brought it up.
They don't want you to veer away from their safety on that project. That's the main thing, because they want to make sure everybody's aware on that.
Yeah, I don't know. So.
Okay, anything else? Let's move to a number 8, Sura Architectural Meeting. Who's doing that?
Corey can tell us about.
Okay, first of all, would you tell us, older people who don't appreciate what SERA means?
That's just their name.
That's their name.
SERA, yeah.
That's the name of the company?
They thought it was catchy, I don't know. Oh, okay. I'm not sure. Sura Architects, they're based in Portland, but the reason they're coming is because the city applied for and was awarded grant funds through the Transportation Growth Management Program, which is through the state. And that's in conjunction with Department of Transportation and maybe LCDC, Land Conservation and Development. So the first time they came was back in the spring, June, early summer, and they visited Lapine and met with some community members and got a feel for the city. And essentially what they're doing next Wednesday night, the 16th, is having a forum here to share about some recommendations for basically a pedestrian friendly and different transportation options for the downtown core, so call it Huntington. Yeah. So they'll be here next Wednesday night. It's open to the public, starts at 5:30, and we'll be able to hear some of their suggestions and they can answer questions that anybody might have.
Yeah, we thought it'd be good for you guys to come because I've seen the PowerPoint because I went over it with them, we reviewed it and they made some changes based on some of the comments from some of the other folks on the phone. But it will be very appropriate for you guys because it gets into sidewalks and curb flares and parking in the downtown as you grow your downtown. How do you provide for parking? So it'll be a neat presentation. They want to hear from you, question and answer, at 5:30 next Wednesday night. So we would like it if all of you can come. The Planning Commission will be there, as well as the council, and it's open to the community. And so it'll be kind of a good report.
That was at 5:30,
the Sura Architects starts, yeah.
Yeah, that'll end their project, and then what we would do is, if we decide to move forward with some more, we would go back to, it's called the TGM, Transportation Growth Management, go back to them and try to get some funding that could help then maybe put some of it into codes. So we'll be doing that, and that would be, we'll see if we want to go down that route, but it should be interesting. Informative.
This is mainly for Huntington?
It is. It's Huntington. It's a Huntington called the downtown. 97, ODOT controls we can't do much, and they'll be redoing it anyway. We already have a grant to redo the west side pretty much, and then they're redoing the whole road. And so that's pretty well done at this point for what we can do in the next little while. Huntington is, obviously off the highway, and ODOT doesn't directly put funding over there, so that's more of our own thing. Although we can get some dollars down the road from help with from ODOT. They have a lot of programs. And the priorities are really moving toward, like it or not, again, we don't get to control this stuff by any means, but it's moving toward pedestrian type stuff. That's where more and more of the pie seems to be going. And it, gripes a bunch of people, but that's, if you don't apply for those, you don't get funding.
Pedestrians and bicycles.
So what you got to tie everything into that.
Yes.
To make it work.
You don't have downtown, you don't have traffic.
And I think that's what Sierra's, some of the stuff they're saying is you have to have a certain amount of density to make a downtown really work, you know, and you got to make it pedestrian friendly and warm and inviting. And they show some good examples of us and the other communities all over the West, and it's a pretty good program, I think. Talks about where you place buildings on properties and all kinds of innovative stuff that cities are doing all around. And that really only works on Huntington. You know, we're not going to have two-story brick building built to the street like a downtown, like the old downtown Redmond or Bend, because we're not aged like that. We don't have two-story brick buildings, you know, that you can create a downtown like that. So it's a little bit different. So then the discussion is, how do you create a downtown when you have one-story buildings? You have to do a lot more trees and bushes and other little things. So, yeah, I think you'll like it. And I do know the Chamber will be here and a lot of those things.
Okay, anything else on that? All right.
Can some of you come?
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Can you plan to attend? I'll
try.
You busy guy down in Mid-State.
Okay, how about other issues and concerns?
I was going to say the sidewalk over on
Matt Court,
because of, you know, not sure what exactly to do with that, you know, a lot of emotion. So we went ahead and hired these guys. I don't know if any of them looked at it, but I know Eric did. Did you?
I did a little bit.
Did you? So we hired our city engineer, basically, Eric Huffman and his firm, these guys, went over and they looked at the whole cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Were you over there?
That whole section anyway.
Yeah, and you've seen the report. Yeah. What does it basically say?
Checked it for ADA compliance. That was really the main thing, was that there are some cramps in the sidewalk, but did anything not meet ADA compliance that would, you know, make you have to do more? And it passed, right?
And then that the
repair that like we talked about, that Vic Russell did last year, there was a spot that needed replaced, and Vic had already planned on replacing that section of concrete, so that's now on his schedule.
So we have an engineer's report that talks about it and says what section needs replaced. So it's not anyone here, you know, it's someone that's what they do for a living. And so they have a full report stamped with their stamp that says what needs to be done. That's been sent to Vic, and Vic is going to do that before winter.
It's going to be done before winter.
That's what he said.
Well, it takes a big load off my back.
Yeah.
Yes, I hear about it almost every day.
Yeah, I mean, but you realize some of those people, they just think they'd like to have all the sidewalks.
I know. I understand.
That's why we decided to get a neutral third party come in, and it's not based on anybody's local emotion. And so anyway, and I talked to Vic when we were out here on the water line, and he said that he's got a guy to go do that in September. You know, September and early October is a good time to be doing that stuff, so that'll be
okay. Good. Have you sold any of the excess equipment out there at the sewer plant?
Yeah, and I don't know where we left with that, but we got bids. We had six items for sale and got bids on four of them.
Oh, really? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
The backhoe.
Which ones?
The backhoe, there were two pickups that didn't get bid on. Okay. And I'm not sure where we are with all of that.
Yeah, so I checked, a double check on that app. Since we went through the process that was required by law and surplused it and did all the advertising, we are now free to just sell. In other words, there is no rules or restrictions of any kind. It's about like you doing it at your house. There was a man here that said he'd like to buy one of the trucks, and virtually no one bid on them because they're value. We're talking, I mean, one guy offered $25. So
that's a pretty good
deal. Kind of saying it's in rough shape.
So, well, we will get rid of those other two somewhere in the $25 to $100 range, is my guess. It'll cost us more to get a tow truck to take them somewhere. So we'll be doing that. But yeah, the backhoe, when people wanted the backhoe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But they had bids ranging from $25 to, or maybe $100 away. $4,800, I think.
Yes, $4,000 something.
For the backhoe.
Yeah.
Right now, metal prices are so low, you know, nobody, that goes in a cycle, and so people don't want things for metal like they did.
No.
So, you know, these aren't, if a guy's a mechanical enough, he could maybe try to get one of them going, I guess.
It was great to get bids on four of this.
Yes, I agree. This is stuff that sat around for a long time. I mean, you had to tow some of it down there, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is the city of Levine looking to have a more permanent city manager? No offense to you, Rick, by any means, because I think you're doing an outstanding job. But I mean,
Corey's full time now, so we're hoping that my time is reducing, and well, his is there, so mine is reducing.
Okay.
That's the plan.
So we'll be able to pick on him 24/7. Then
I think so.
We'll be here all the time. That's good.
Yeah. we're going like this.
I've had two neighbors come to me recently here in the last week, 10 days, said they heard rumors that Lapine is trying to move, I want to say, so-called Main Street to Huntington, so we can have our functions down Huntington as opposed to having anything on 97. Have you heard anything about that?
What do you mean by functions?
Well, whenever we have, well, we used to have part of a parade years ago for Frontier Days, go down to 97. I know that doesn't happen anymore.
No. Yeah, you know, ODOT wouldn't let you shut down 97 anymore.
Right.
No.
Yeah. And well, I think Huntington, obviously, in the side streets over there, is where you'd have celebrations, events.
Yes, yeah. Well, and we've had troubles with the Halloween thing, crossing 97 at Halloween in the past. Anyway, I hadn't heard anything about this.
Well, I think what they're probably just saying is we're focusing on the downtown to create a downtown, and downtown, like downtown Bend blocks their streets for
yes.
festivals,
yes.
Because you don't put them on the main highway, obviously. Right. So, yeah.
I think what you heard was that they were trying to make Huntington Beach and where the center would be in the town instead
yes.
of 97.
Yes. Yes.
And try to get the businesses along Huntington instead of 97. And that would be like a main
yes.
new main street.
Yes. I think that's what they were
yeah.
implying.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not going to rename it.
It's No. There's no name
no.
change.
No. It's just like the center of the city.
Mm-hmm.
More, right?
Which
sounds good.
You got your banks down there, schools,
yes.
your parks.
And you got Weimark down there, one more, and then you're going to have the credit union down by St. Chris and Park. So it's better that way. And get off the main highway.
Great. I've got a question. Does anybody know what's going on across from the school out there?
Oh.
They cleaned out all that was
oh,
out
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
that's yeah. A proposed apartment project that is in the planning stages. And they just went in and cleared that. I think they kind of cleared where they think their roads and driveways are going. You know, and obviously they had to thin out a ton of trees because you're not going to be able to keep all those with the development. So
yeah,
I call
they destroyed the kids' lunch hour, you know that.
Oh, because kids could sit out there, yeah.
They can't hide out there anymore.
I know. It's terrible.
Right. Are they proceeding with that or are they all stalled up? Because
where we are.
Their site plans that they turned into the planning commission just plain suck. They're no good at all. They don't work. They're not going to work, period.
Can't get there from here.
Uh-huh.
Can't get there from here.
No.
Well, where we are with them is, well, first of all, they hired an attorney to work through it. So then when they do that, you know, that makes everything complicated. But we are, like, I mean, I throw a percentage, probably 90% through. They've revised their plans. They did have four plexes, now they have three plexes because under the county, it's not the county, it's the ADA rules are significant. When you have a fourplex, you have to meet some ADA rules, and if you have a threeplex, you don't. It's mind-boggling. So anyway, they have taken out a couple buildings and did some threeplexes. They then had a big cul-de-sac. Well, you can only go so many feet under the fire code with a cul-de-sac, and the cul-de-sac has to be so big. Well, then that took out units, so now they're doing, which I just saw this last week, they're going to have a little gate coming onto Huntington. If you've seen them on 97 with the red gates, you can only open for fire. So the fire department said that's fine, so they're going to have some sort of a gate on Huntington that the public can't use, and that's in place of the cul-de-sac. Again, so they're engineer. They have their own engineering firm, which is Hickman Williams. They've been working and redrawing these things. So with all the different things, it's complicated because it's a big project. And everything is involved from mailboxes to garbage pickup to water. Where does water go? You know, where do fire trucks turn around? The width of the road by code, by the fire code, requires that then you have to have no parking signs all along it, because they will let you have a narrower street if there's no parking. Once you have parking, then the street has to be narrower, wider, because people will park on the street. So those are all things that they've been going. And so between our planner, their planner, called their engineering firm, the fire department, and now with attorneys, that's kind of where we are, and I think that they are at. And then next they have to have is a traffic study update, because the original plan when they had these fourplexes and things required at some point there's a left turn lane going in there on Huntington. You know, you don't like to get backed up behind people turning left. Huntington's a main road. Well, they have an engineer that said at a certain point you need to have a left turn lane. It triggers at a certain phase. Well, now they've changed it all. They've shrunk their commercial, because they had to make room for these other things. So they're going to have that updated. That will dictate the left turn lane. And that's something they're hiring. And the county, of course, owns and controls all the roads surrounding this. They're not City of Lapine roads. As you well know, Coach and Huntington are county roads. So it's a process, but it's a good, I mean, it's frustrating to all parties involved. It's you want it done right. And I've heard that from you, and I've heard it from the Planning Commission. So.
Well, if you do it right the first time, you don't have to go back and redo it again.
That's correct. So that's what's going on.
Okay, let's move on to public comments. Anyone in the public like to make a comment? You don't have to get up or anything.
That's fine. I'm Blaine Costello.
Name and address for the record, please.
16179 Hoxler Road. I have a couple of comments to make about a couple of issues here. On the water sewer rate change update, on the flip side of what Mr. Allen said, everybody that I've talked to is really angry about their bills being doubled. And they're very angry that the fire department's rate has gone up 550%. And not only that, when they come out and they put out a fire at your home, no matter where you're at, on Pine or whatever, they come out and they're paying 550% to fill their tanks up on their truck to put the fire out in your home. Then they're paying the sewer for the water that runs off that house. I think you all need to realize that. It's not fair. Mike, the fire chief, he is so upset right now, he's ready to cut his water with the city and go and reactivate the wells that are on his property right now, just for the irrigation. So I think you really need to look at this, everybody, and see really what's going on out there. There's a lot of people that are low income or fixed income that just got their rates doubled, and they're really upset. I mean, that takes away food from their kids and their families. So there's got to be a better way. If it levels out in the winter, then why don't we do an average all the way throughout the year? Why don't we calculate that and figure out a yearly deal for the residents around there, instead of hiking it all the way up in July, and then they go low in the wintertime? I think that needs to be looked at. And everybody I talk to, and this is both commercial and residential, I haven't heard one person that was okay with their water bill. The beautification project, with a lot of commercial outfits around here, And not that I'm against the beautification, I'm for it. But the thing is, when you raise the rates on the water and you hit them with a big bill and everything else and expect them to keep their freaking flowers growing and the grass growing and everything else in front of their business, a lot of them are saying, you know what, screw it, let it die. So please, please look at this again. Don't let this lie. The First Street project update. You were talking about a $150,000 grant that you gave to ODOT. None of that was paid for the shutdown on the project for the landscaping?
I know nothing about any costs to shut down.
So you don't know about a delay project?
No.
So the city didn't shut down the project on First Street, that intersection?
We did not shut it down.
Okay, so Ken Mullinex, our mayor, lied to me then.
No.
Well, that's exactly what he told me.
I think it's a terminology question. The city has no power to shut it down because the contract is between ODOT and the contractor. A third party can't come in and shut something down.
Everybody I talked to said that you did.
Well, no.
I'm just saying, I'm looking into this further, but that's what I'm being told right now.
We can't tell a contractor who doesn't work for us to come to work or not.
Well, okay. The only agency that could shut something down would be OSHA, and that would be a safety violation.
No.
They have an agreement. ODOT, the contractor and ODOT have an agreement that talks about what they do and how they do things. And we're not party to it. We didn't bid the project. We didn't approve the project.
It wasn't shut down for the landscaping and for the grant? Are you telling me right now that didn't happen? For the landscaping that you wanted to put in and the sleeves that you wanted to put through their project, it did not shut down that project.
You're jumping around. The sleeves were part of the original project based on the knowledge I have. That was in the original bids back a year ago. The sleeving, that was always in the bid. So that issue was taken care of a long time ago. When we applied, and you guys know because we've talked about it, we applied for a $150,000 grant to do lighting and or landscaping, and ODOT, worked it through their system. I mean, nothing we control. They have their systems, and it required a vote of the Transportation Commission. They only meet every 2 or 3 months or something. They took it to their June meeting. We didn't put it on the agenda. ODOT put it on their agenda, approved it. We were all happy that was done. I think on June 10th or 12th, and then they had to add that to the project because it was called like a change order or something. And they change projects all the time. They have a system in place. It's all built into their contracts with their contractors. There isn't a project around that doesn't have changes. So it wouldn't matter if it was $1,000 or $100,000. I mean, they have a system in place. They went through that system. And I don't have copies of the contracts between them and their contractor. My understanding is it was followed the way they do all projects.
It's not.
Well,
Go talk to ODOT.
I did. I talked to ODOT, I talked to Tomco, and I'm having a meeting with the head of ODOT next week. And they discuss this very matter. And the thing is, I run major projects like this, and change orders, you do not shut a job down. If you shut a job down, that is why this job is almost a month and a half behind schedule. That's why it is going to fall into the late part of October. That's why it's $405,000 over budget right now, is because of the shutdowns and delays. This is me talking to ODOT and talking to Tomco, okay? And again, I'm going to ODOT next week, and I'll get more answers for you. But anyway, it's just, I run multi-million dollar jobs. We've had change orders. We've had delays. I told you about the irrigation land out there. The first thing that happened when we were grubbing the field is the skipper sunk down with freaking knuckles. And we had to pull them out with a crane and everything else. It put me 2 weeks behind schedule, but we kept the schedule going. We never stopped. I was told from everybody that it was the city of Lapine that stopped that job. So, I'll get to the bottom of it. And then the water main shut down, and we discussed that and everything else. we're doing the repairs, which is fine. It sounded like it went like clockwork and everything else, but are we getting a soils engineer and an engineer on this to repair this properly where it doesn't happen again? Just a thought. I'm just throwing it out there. The Planning Commission for the low-cost housing that it's putting in, this set of plans has been in your hands for a year and a half. That's why they have an attorney on it. And I'd like to know who has been doing the plan check up to this point since we got a new plan checker.
Bill Adams.
Bill Adams, okay, and we hired him. He's an actual plan checker.
Oh, he was the Klamath County planner. Okay. He was working for the city of Redmond.
Great.
He's now semi-retired and does it as a business.
So you're talking about a left-hand turn lane. I've already talked to the fire department, and they already said that the clearance on that cul-de-sac and everything else was fine. It fell into code for them. And everything was being adjusted, like driveways not being long enough for four-wheel drive trucks and stuff like that. Petty little things on this plan check that has been thrown back at because of difference of opinion on how it should look and how it should flow. It is not code. It is not other things. The fire department's been good about it. Is there a civil engineer drawing on this job?
Well, of course, I mean, they have an engineer that's drawing.
Okay, I'm asking for a civil engineer. Is there a civil engineer?
Yeah, Hickman.
Okay, a civil engineer will take care of that part with that left-hand turn lane. If it's attached to those drawings, it should be on there. And if it's not, that's what I would ask for, is a civil engineer drawing. And usually when you build a project like this, like all the projects I've done, I put in street lights and fire hydrants and pedestrian walks and everything else. And it was all added on to the project. If they want to do the project, then they take care of these things. But if they're meeting code and everything is on the up and up, and the only thing that's holding it back is opinions on certain people within the city, there's something wrong here. You know, it goes back, we're talking about like the properties out there, the commercial property out there. You have to make it attractive for people to come in here. You know what I mean? And when the word gets out that it's difficult to build anything in Lapine, nobody's going to come. You'll never sell that land out there. You'll never have new projects coming in, like the bank that was supposed to go down here. You won't have this stuff. You have to make it attractive. You have to work with the people that want to come in here and build, that want to come into this community. And if you don't, it's your loss. That's all I got to say. Thanks a lot.
Wait a minute. I want to make a comment before you leave.
Okay.
I'm the chair of the Planning Commission, and okay. I know what's going on with that low-cost housing apartment building thing. They've come to the Planning Commission two times. The first time they came, they wanted a zoning change because that property was zoned Forest Park, non-residential. We gave them a zoning change.
All right.
Against the wishes of a whole lot of people in this town that didn't want to see that. Number two, they delivered a site plan, which they later said was no good and to throw it away and have nothing, that it wouldn't work. They said that, not us. We never said anything about the site plan. They did. They have not been back to the Planning Commission yet. Now, what they're doing with our head planner and with the city is working out all the details. There's nothing going on as far as the city goes or the Planning Commission goes that is causing them any problems. They're the ones that are trying to fix it so it's right. So don't get
so
the
idea. Trying to
wait
fix
a minute,
it's
I'm
right.
Not done yet. Don't get the idea that the Planning Commission or the city is against that property. That we have put down certain restrictions. Number one, that's not going to look like the ghetto out here on the other side of town. And that's exactly where it was going to be heading if we approved the site plans that they had. That's why they changed it. No one is causing them a problem. They're working on their own problems themselves. When they come back to the Planning Commission again and show us what they're going to do, then we'll look at it.
And actually,
but they haven't done that yet.
Chairman Doug, I think that probably in the next the last thing I got when they're finishing up some things, but they will, they're going to, we're going to try to have something for you to review in the next three, could be month, but somewhere soon. We may have to have a special meeting, in fact, for that. And once everything's kind of put together here, so that you can kind of get a review of that. So I think it's come together. I think it's probably, you know, neither side wanted everything that's there, but I think it's worked out from the way I understand that it will work. It's going to function and stuff. They just kind of have to wait for a few more reports in. But when I talked to their attorney through our attorney, they're fine at this point, from my understanding. The next day they're going to review a couple of the things. And, yeah. And well, we did have to do the zone change.
Okay.
I can say with facts that wherever your information is coming from.
Directly from her.
That is saying, well, wherever it's coming from, it's not, the problems are not coming from the Planning Commission, the planner, or the city.
Really?
We're not against the project, or we never would have gave them the zoning change.
Okay, but
period.
Have you met with them off to the side? Privately, without this committee, without Doug Ward in there?
Staff meets, has met with them numerous times.
Okay, there you go. That's so she met with the Planning Committee twice, but she's met with them numerous times.
That's their job.
I understand that, but the thing is, they're making it difficult for anybody to build here. She's not the only one. There are other people that want to build here, that want to expand. And they're having a difficult time with the city of Lapine. So you can yell and scream all you want at me. I'm the messenger. I'm letting you guys know what's being said out in the street. Okay?
That's
just like I'm telling you about the water rate hike and everything else. There's more to it than what you know. I just think they... Well, you just have to make it easier and work with people. Shouldn't take a year and a half to do a plan check.
You need to understand what I'm trying to say.
I understand what you're saying.
That the Planning Commission is not causing any stumbling blocks for this project at all. We have agreed to everything so far that they want. Now, when they come back with the further information, what the roads are going to be like, how the parking's going to be, mm-hmm. then we'll look at it.
I do understand that. I do understand that, but I think you misunderstand me.
No, I don't. No,
yeah, you do, because they're having difficulty with the city.
Okay.
Okay. But they're staffing with the city and everything else out to the side, and they only came to you twice, and you don't know the whole story.
The story we know is the story that we're involved with.
You just proved my point on that. Okay.
Just to remind the you guys, we did the zone change. You're talking about a year and a half. We did the zone change basically February, the middle of February 2015. That was 6 months. Was it 6 months ago? February to now.
Yeah.
That's when we did the zone change. You can't apply for something till after the zone change. So all applications for this project came in after the zone change. And the zone change, which you can go on the record and see, we had a hearing in January, so it was effective around in February when we finished up the zone change. So March, April, May, June, July, August, September, we're just now the 1st of September. It's a major commercial project with lots of roads. It takes up most of a block, and I think they're going to be before you in a few weeks. So I think it may be a little slower than it could be a month or two slower than we might like, but 18 months, you know, that's just hyperbole. And I just want to clarify that.
My main point to what I just said about this, if it takes a year and a half for to go through the planning department and the city to approve plans for a low-cost housing area, what does that tell the companies that want to come into our community, the new companies that want to buy that real estate back there? What does it tell the other people in this community who want to build, who want to expand, that it's a year and a half is ridiculous? And that's what I was told. I'm just here so you guys are aware of it, so you guys can really think about what's going on. You have to work with these people. You have to make it attractive for businesses to come in this area. And if you don't, that's just going to be a freaking wasteland out there for the next 10, 20 years. And the other thing I want to point out is you take in money for planchette, and quite a bit of it from what I hear in certain times. And just to let y'all know, the fire department, who's part of the plan check, gets nothing. Absolutely nothing for their plan check part of this. So I want to make sure that you guys know that as well. They have to do inspections. I'm sure some of you were builders here, and you have the fire department involved in it, and they get nothing.
Excuse me, are you representing the fire department?
I'm representing the people of Woodbine.
I just wondered, you don't remember talking.
You don't live in Lafayette.
You know what? I get that all the time. But you know what? When I sign my ballot for my vote, for my mayor and everything else.
No, you don't. If you don't live in the city, you don't vote for the mayor.
Excuse me, I did.
You did? You're
not supposed to? I did live in Lapine, and I did vote for Ken.
You live in Lapine now?
You know what? What is it again? I have a Lapine address.
Because a lot of times you come in here, you complain about things, you've never been to any of the meetings that we're discussing what we're going to do. Yeah, I know
okay.
You weren't here. When we talked about water rates, you were not here.
Okay.
And it was publicly...
So, right now I just lost 2 hours worth of work to come
and
to this
the
meeting.
Other thing, too, you just said, you complained today about the fire department's bill. Rick, at the beginning of the meeting, addressed that, and that's been taken care of. So that issue is null and void.
They're getting
a rebate. If you're the listener,
I heard that, but I'm
okay,
going to talk to Mike when I leave
up.
Here.
It's been taken care of.
Well, I'll go talk to Mike when I leave here.
Good.
Because Mike didn't tell me that this morning,
yeah,
but I talked to him.
Care.
Then, therefore, you're trying to say you represent the...
I belong to the Lapine Community Watch Program, and also the Lapine Pay It Forward. And I let people know what's going on in the community of Lapine. So, that's why I'm here. I'm here for the community of Lapine. Whether you call me a resident or not, I still care about my friends and my neighbors. And they live in the city of Lapine. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate hearing it. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to have a statement, please? Name and address, please.
Kevin Scott, Murray Road, Lapine. On a common note, Doug knows that everybody in the Cambo subdivision wondering about the water and stuff. I mean, could we like put something in writing so we can post it in a few spots? Are they going to be obligated to go on the system?
We don't know all those things yet. I mean,
yeah, that's what I figure. But
we can come up with a little press release thing. We can come up with kind of a timeline of the jump-off points.
Because rumors are always the negatives.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
But I think that they can rest assured unless the council has...
Thanks for backing me up.
Oh, no problem.
Unless there's a different position is that we allow people in the city now to use wells. So
it
wouldn't be any different out there. We'd have to stop it in the rest of the city if we did, and that's not going to happen. Because actually, like I said, the schools use well water. We want people using well water. The cost to mitigate and buy water rights,
right,
as you said about, is that whole numbers thing. It costs us so much because we're such a small system.
Yeah.
So we want people, really, the best world is it only takes care of people, what they're going to drink and take showers and cook, you know, really, in a perfect world. And everything outside use wells. A lot of cities, they want to just sell the water.
Yeah.
But now that model's changing because even in Bend, you have to buy water rights. And that's this infrastructure for the pipes that's required to get you water. If we're going to water outdoors, it costs a lot of money. So we're really, I think, you know, yeah, we should be fine. But I think we could put out a kind of idea is, we're just in the preliminary stages. We have not decided to build a system there because until we know what it costs, and how much, if we got 100% grants, well, that makes it a lot cheaper.
Well, this is just to cut rumors like, like this, you know?
So,
because there's some people out there for Higgs, I could, probably Doug knows that, he probably hit him on his house, but.
Sure.
And the other thing is, like, say if I bought 3 lots out there and wanted to build on it, I have to put a whole sand filter in and everything else.
Right now you would.
Right now. So it's basically it's
only. And you're lucky it's only a sand filter.
Yeah.
Actually, you have to put a nitrate system in.
But yeah.
They're 15, 20 grand.
Yeah. That's what I.
Not the sewers there.
So it's basically it's landlocked for three or 4 years.
Well, no, I mean, you can still go put in a septic system. There's nothing we're doing. We're just studying. I mean, there's nothing. In fact, there is a rule that once we say for sure we're doing it, they will actually let you put in the cheaper systems as long as we know that it's going to be built within 5 years. I can't say that right now because the council hasn't decided to build it 100%.
Right.
And a DEQ rule isn't 90% good enough. It's got to be 100%.
Yeah.
But the other good thing is during that 5 year period, if we get there, then any repairs can also be kind of what they call, and I'm going to use the wrong term because I don't know their terminology, but a temporary or a
minimal repair.
Where if without us moving forward, you'd have to go put in the whole new expensive system. If they know we're coming, they'll let you go make something that'll get you by because they don't want you to spend thousands that are just thrown away.
But that you have to do that like after the council votes on.
Probably will be good. I think we'll make an argument once we get the funding. If we say yes after the funding, so during the year that they're designing it and building it, that's pretty guaranteed. And I would think we'd argue that, the other thing I've talked to a guy that was in that wanted to maybe build over there, I said work with Scott maybe and tell him what kind of tank we would want and where it's located on the property. Because then, when we do put the sewer in, you can just hook right into it. Don't bury the tank around in your backyard. things like that. And he said, that's a great idea. So they don't have any expenses. And when we do this, we'll try to use tanks that we can use.
Yeah, and there's been a few contractors, when they do a tank replacement, put in a city spec.
Yeah. It's, on one hand, we were somewhat lectured over how you should engineer for just one fire hydrant. And, we're going to have 80 units of fire hydrants and roads and things. And, yes, we did do engineering to avoid what just happened out there. And that takes some time and effort. And, I think at the end of the day, we'll end up with most of these things, we're trying to do them right and in a systematic order. And government is a slow, expensive bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
As I always tell people, I built plenty of buildings of all sizes, big and little. And, I can build them for less because I don't have the rules and regulations. I don't have to pay prevailing wages and I don't have to have everything double engineered and I don't have to have hearings on everything we do. And so, government is a process. And we do care about, can a fire truck get down the road when we know people are going to park on, you can put up no parking signs. All that means is that just gives me something to pull up too. Because in this project, just a little side note, the roads are driveways. They're calling them driveways. And the first set of plans called them roads. Now they're calling them driveways. Now, they're 22 feet long and they'll go several hundred or 1,000 feet. And to you, when you drive down it, you will think you're on a road, but you're on a driveway.
A long driveway.
A long driveway. And so they're private. Well, when they're private, the sheriff's office and the city has no jurisdiction over parking. So you go put up no parking signs. Who enforces no parking?
Not a private
association is supposed to.
Well, it's an apartment building, so it'd be the apartment owner. So, you'll see. You'll see. So those are just things that we bring up and we talk about and are trying to work through. And there is a gate being placed. They came up with that. And that was all something they negotiated with the fire department was to have this gate. And so I'm assuming
I think 18 months is like, that's quick.
Well, but it wasn't 18 months.
They couldn't do anything until the zoning was changed anyway. So that was just done in February. Come on, guys.
You guys don't need this stuff.
The 18 months, throw that away.
The zone change was just done, so.
Maybe I'll have it, if you're going to speak and complain, you got to be living in the city of Lapine.
Well, what I'm hearing from him is he's hearing from everybody else.
Right.
Has he gone to the source of the city? Has he gone to the engineer? It doesn't sound like that.
No.
Well, it sounds like he, that's why I asked him whether he represented the fire department.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't believe that Mike would, or the chief would send somebody like him down here to complain about the fire.
Well, people yeah, like him, they'll tell him whatever he wants to hear to get rid of him.
Yeah. The fire department bill is up about 21% again. I mean, 20%. We haven't had a rate increase in 13 years. So Mike and I talked on the phone. I went over how we came up with that methodology, and we have a basis for it. It's not just pulled out of thin air. And when you take the two buildings, the administrative building and the fire building,
together,
their bill is up 20%. I think he said 500.
You said 550%.
550%.
I wrote it down.
Off a little.
Well, that was what he said at the last council meeting.
Yeah. So we went ahead and adjusted the bill back, figured that same scenario back to July 1, and it calculated out. They owed us money, or we owed them money, and they have a credit ahead. And I went to do the meter back to what?
3 weeks?
About when him and I, yeah, we talked, he had it done and must have ordered it up.
Yeah, no, that was the first one we did as soon as we worked.
And straightened it up.
Yeah, we had no basis with them because, you know, there was no, you have a building with five guys. Yeah. I think it was five or six. You have 3 to 4 full-time paid guys that sleep there. And then you had 1 or 2 students. So you had between 4 and 6 who sleep there, wash clothes there, go to the bathroom and take showers. So then you try to correlate that. I called it, if you think of it, that's kind of like a big family because they're all male adults.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the same water as a family of 4 or 5? Probably, because you don't do as much washing, you don't have babies and diapers, you know. But, I mean, you can only do so much. So we compared and looked at Sisters and Redmond and Prineville Fire Department, how many paid guys they had, and how they meter and how they water, and came up with kind of the usage level. So what we're doing with them, we're saying, I call it the domestic side.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever water they use, we're going to figure 7,000 gallons
yes.
per month is used for domestic. Anything above it, if it's a 10,000 or 100,000, is not charged. We assume that's going into the bays, washing fire trucks, hosing down bays, washing turnouts, because they have big, huge commercial washing machine for those, and then filling fire trucks. All of that is being weighed. And it doesn't matter if the fire truck put a fire out 10 miles out of town. They're going to come in and fill it up. We're filling it for free. That's fine. That's not even an issue. It's just there. So, and Mike was fine with that and supported it. And we replaced the meter at their request on the one. And that's all part of this whole matrix we did. It's done. And
Al, they took one thing away from what he said. Have you looked into an average payment plan for the homeowners?
We can. We need a year of billing first.
So
to get an average, you have to have a year.
Yeah, right. And that's something that we do at Mid-State.
Well, you have to wait until
an equal pay.
The end of June of next year because we just started.
Yeah.
So it would be next year anyway.
Right. Yeah. No.
But I'm sure we would entertain that.
Well, one of the things that I mentioned that nobody was here when we were discussing the rate hikes. And you mentioned it yourself, right? That first bill gets in out there, they're going to be screaming and hollering. If they'd have been here and listened to what the discussion was on the water rates, that we had people subsidizing other people. And that's not right. And I said it right from the beginning. I think you do a system like what Mid-State has. You have a basic fee, and if you do use electricity, you pay for the electricity.
Yep.
You pay for it if you're not using it.
And we're in. And water's got some different rules than Mid-State.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that kind of a
we're a public
race
agency,
system, you know.
We're not a, you know. There are some differences.
Yeah. I agree with that.
With water,
but you can base. Okay, this is a base on it. Let's. What do we have to do to meet the water part of it? That's all.
Yeah. No. I think that a level a system like that, something to look into in our programs probably.
You're making it equal for everybody. Use less water, you pay less. Use more water, you're going to pay more. Simple as that.
How it's supposed to work. Did either of you two gentlemen have anything to say, anything to comment? No?
No.
Okay.
From staff? Thanks for coming, and you're going to hear some of these kind of things, you know, somebody.
Oh, it's just normal.
So,
a lot of it's based on rumors.
And I have one thing I do want to say. I'm trying to tell this to as many people as possible. So, Dennis, if you have people up in Cable that want to know about a certain issue, or anyone else, no matter what the issue is dealing with the city of Lapine, tell them to call City Hall and ask for Corey Misley, or to come down and stop by between 8:30 and 5, and I will try to sit down and explain to them everything that I know. And if I don't have an answer, I'll do more research and share as much as we know with them about it. So, spread that around. Spread that rumor around. That's true.
I do that all the time.
I know.
But people never call.
Oh, I know. No, it doesn't.
They would rather stay home.
Sure.
And complain. Yep. And come down here and complain.
Sure.
They don't read the paper. They don't read the Wise Buds. They don't read the Frontier. They don't read a damn thing. They don't listen to the radio. They don't listen to the news. But yet they know everything.
That's true. Well, that's because they get on the internet for the watch.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah.
Anything further comments from the committee?
None for me.
Anybody? Well, the only thing I can say is one thing about sewer and water rates. For years and years and years and years, I don't know how long the sewer plant's been out here, but most people and commercial developments were underpaying what they should have been paying to begin with.
Yep.
And now they're catching up to reality for what it actually really costs, and it's going up, and they don't understand it because they don't want to understand it. They just see the bill going up. They don't want to sit down and figure out that, hey, for 10 years we didn't pay enough.
I can't just remember Ben was having a meeting because of their water rates. It changed it, and then it's all good, and people get the bills. Then all the little things come out.
Yep.
Yes.
Then they find the leaks, like you mentioned, they wonder found the leaks, and you're like, oh my God.
The first meeting after we raised the rates, we had 4 raised.
So you blame City Hall for the leaks.
That's way less than 1%.
All right, then if there's nothing else, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
Second.
Okay.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
So try to attend next Wednesday if you can. I think
you'll oh, yeah.